Starting in 1783, various English concert societies began inviting Haydn to come over to England to conduct and compose, hang out, and get very rich. Unfortunately, and much to Haydn's unhappiness, he had to decline any and all such offers to travel abroad. There was no chance that Prince Nicholas the Big Shot would grant his famous Kapellmeister such an extended leave of absence. Listen, if we were in Prince Nicholas's gold lame and diamond-studded slippers, would any of us grant Haydn such a leave? Do any of us think that Haydn would have returned to his wife and the routine at Esterhazy after tasting the high life in London? Prince Nicholas was justifiably proud of Haydn and his accomplishments, but Nicholas was equally savvy to the fact that Haydn's market value and his growing desire to see the world and enjoy his celebrity were beyond anything he or his family could offer. Haydn's popularity in England during the late 1780s was such that the press saw his position as little better than imprisonment, and even went so far as to suggest that Haydn be kidnapped and brought to London. I kid you not. The following appeared in the London Review. There is something very distressing to the liberal mind in the history of Haydn. This wonderful man, who is the Shakespeare of music and the triumph of the age in which we live, is doomed to reside in the court of a miserable German prince who is at once incapable of rewarding him and unworthy of the honor. Haydn, the simplest as well as the greatest of men, is resigned to his condition, is content to live immured in a place little better than a dungeon, subject to the domineering spirit of a petty lord and the clamorous temper of a scolding wife. My, word does get around. Would it not be an achievement equal to a pilgrimage for some aspiring youths to rescue him from his prison and transplant him to Great Britain, the country for which his music seems to be made, unquote? Well, of course, Haydn wasn't a prisoner, but a loyal subject devoted to his prince. That having been said, by 1790, after 29 years working for the same family, the bloom had come off the Esterhazy rose. In that time, Haydn had gone from being a kid from Rohrau, the son of a wheelwright, to a world-famous composer. He had learned his craft and paid his dues, and increasingly he wanted to enjoy, and rightly so, the fruits of his labors. In 1790, Haydn was 58 years old. Can we blame him if the routine and isolation of Esterhazy no longer held the same old attraction for him? Now, aside from Mozart, Haydn's best Viennese friends were Peter von Genzinger and his wife, Marianne. Genzinger was a successful doctor who had been Prince Nicholas's personal physician, and Marianne was an excellent singer and pianist. Their home became a gathering place for Vienna's elite, which, when he was in town with his prince, included Haydn himself. According to Carl Geringer, in the Genzinger household, Haydn found an atmosphere that seemed like a fulfillment of his dreams, a comfortable, pleasant home, a woman of high culture who took the keenest interest in every one of his new compositions, and who at the same time was a thoughtful enough hostess that she prepared his favorite dishes. The Genzinger home offered him all that he had missed most throughout his married life. He basked in the congenial atmosphere, only to feel all the more strongly the misery of his lonely existence when he returned to Esterhazy, unquote. Haydn's loneliness is well described in a letter he wrote to Marianne Genzinger immediately after returning to Esterhazy from a visit to Vienna in early 1790. "Well, here I sit in my wilderness, forsaken like some poor orphan, almost without human society, melancholy, dwelling on the memory of past glorious days." Yes, past, alas. And who can tell when those happy hours may return, those charming meetings where the whole circle has but one heart and one soul, all those delightful musical evenings that can only be remembered and not described? Where are all those inspired moments? Forgive me, dear lady, for taking up your time in this, my very first letter, with so wretched a scrawl and such a stupid nonsense. You must forgive a man spoiled by the Viennese. Now, however, I begin to accustom myself by degrees to country life, unquote. In another letter to Marianne Genzinger, written a few months later, we find our ordinarily cheerful Haydn bemoaning his servitude, frankly, almost whining.